to In Beta, a semi-regular conversation between physiotherapy educators who are interested in curriculum reform, innovation and critical thinking about teaching and learning. My name is Ben Ellis. I'm a lecturer in physiotherapy at Oxford Brookes University in the UK.
And I'm Michael Rowe, a lecturer in the Department of Physiotherapy at the University of the Western Cape in South Africa. In Beta is an international virtual community that's free for anyone to join. You can find us on Google Plus by searching for the In Beta community or using the In Beta hashtag on Twitter. And now, on with the conversation.
Welcome to the In Beta podcast, Sarah. We're very glad that you put aside a little bit of time to chat with us. As we were saying before, Ben and I both came across your paper, Moving Forth, Imagining Physiotherapy Education Differently. We came across that a little while ago, and we thought it'd be really nice to hear some of your thoughts on physiotherapy education, in particular, your kind of the ideas that you had about paradigms and thresholds. So it's really great that we're finally able to put this together and have a conversation. Sarah, you're busy with your PhD at the moment.
I am.
Yeah. Is that related to the paper that you published? Is your research kind of in that area in general?
Yeah. Well, that paper actually, I'm doing my thesis supported by publication, and that paper is one that will go into my thesis when it's finished, hopefully not too soon, or not too far away. And I guess it's one of the first papers to set up the theoretical framework of my thesis, and it's part of a culmination of some thinking I've been doing over a while, actually, about curriculum and teaching and the physiotherapy profession and what our students maybe need to learn to be not just ready for the first day of their practice, but really to be more equipped for their careers and to take the profession forward in new directions as well.
Yeah, kind of not just focusing on the what they need to do, but the how they need to do it, the how they think about themselves, the how they think about identity, those sorts of things.
Absolutely. And even for the what, thinking of the what in bigger terms than just content or knowledge and skills, which certainly was a lot of my physiotherapy learning as an undergraduate, and it has its place. But I think healthcare now needs to think about what in sort of broader terms than just knowledge, right, and skills and competency.
So you've mentioned now that you think that we need to look at the profession more broadly with our new graduates. So can you maybe just talk a little bit about what you think are some of the things that are problematic with curriculum and how the notion of threshold concepts or different paradigms might help us to think differently about the way we teach?
That's a big question.
It is a big question.
I think one of them is the idea of knowledge and skills and being competent. It almost suggests this idea that you get somewhere and you've arrived. Right. Where we all kind of know that, you know, the learning only kind of starts, I think, from graduation in some respects. Even what knowledge and skills actually is, you know, it wasn't until I was reading some of the higher education literature that talks about different forms of knowledge and, you know, personal knowledge being an important part of that. The idea of subject versus course curriculum, you know, the physiotherapy degrees are driven to an end goal, and I think, you know, how those subjects fit together is an important consideration in curriculum. You know, there's a certain degree of needing a thread through courses in some respects. And I just think thinking about curriculum in broad, expansive ways, one of the things I've been thinking about, you know, ways of thinking and practicing has really helped me to see curriculum as, you know, not just the classes and the assessments, but it's the people that are involved and the environment and, you know, all those big things that contribute to, I guess, a learning culture as well. Yeah, I don't know if I've answered your question there, but there's some things that come to mind.
No, I think you definitely are kind of leading us down that path where we kind of want to say, how are we thinking about curriculum differently? Mm. And one of the things that you mentioned in the paper is this idea of preparing people to work with uncertain futures. Yeah. So how is the 21st century different? How are our graduates... or how is the context in which the graduates are going to work different, where they have to be prepared to work in this uncertainty?
Yeah. I think things are changing so quickly. That's probably one big contributor. I think healthcare is changing all the time. It's not the same beast as when I first started practicing, and it's constantly needing to change in response to society's needs. So that makes it uncertain. I think globalization also adds to the uncertainty as well. So you can't just be thinking in your local context. There's also always a bigger sort of influence. But if we are talking about a local situation, you never really know what's going to come through the door and what you're going to be faced with. And, you know, I think there's that immediate uncertainty too that students need to be prepared for.
Yeah.
You don't know what your clients are going to tell you
and
what they want to focus on.
And I think physiotherapy as a profession is quite conservative and resistant. Maybe that's not fair. I think there are some people in the profession who welcome change.
Yeah.
But I think the profession itself is quite resistant to change and is quite wedded to the way that we teach. And maybe it has something to do with the kind of very positivist way that we think about physiotherapy practice. Body as machine. You know, press here, this hard, for this long, and you fix the machine.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of thinking about practice can kind of seep into the way that we think about teaching.
Yeah.
That, you know, students are machines to some extent, and we just have to input the right amount of data at the right points.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of 4 years, they will be a physiotherapist.
Yeah. I hadn't thought of our students in terms of that machine idea, but... what you say there resonates with how I've been taught and my experience in some areas of physiotherapy education. Yeah, and I think there's a tension there too, though, that, how do you create this change in thinking, it's the two areas, physiotherapy education wanting to change, but also the profession being receptive to that change and working on that together. And I think there is a real tension and a real challenge there.
Yeah. I think we'll come back to some of that, the conversation about that tension and whether or not there's anything that we can do to, as physiotherapy educators, to try and engender a more kind of receptive approach. Or is there any way that we can use a language in the way we talk about what it is that we do to kind of be more open to clinicians.
Can I just come in there with a quick question?
Of course.
So I was just interested, Sarah, whether or not you felt, because we talked about physiotherapy and maybe that we can be quite conservative as a professional group. I wonder how much any of this stuff is also influenced by like the wider kind of healthcare faculty, if you like. So most physio courses are obviously going to sit in an institution alongside other courses, and which are often larger in terms of student numbers and have maybe been around longer. And how much kind of physio education you feel might have been influenced by those other kind of professions. I didn't know if that came into this at all.
So other professions outside of healthcare?
No, so I'm thinking here kind of within healthcare. So certainly from my experience, it feels like the way that we kind of conceive of things like competency frameworks seems quite influenced by nursing. And medical training to an extent, And so certainly in institutions like mine, where the physio program is a very small part of a faculty which has very large kind of nursing focus, then the institutional way of thinking about learning does have this tendency to break stuff down into kind of knowledge, skills, you know, competency, tick things off, which seems to be, certainly in the UK, kind of a relatively nursing way of thinking, and that bleeds through into like how the health service organises its kind of career structure and all these ideas that we then feed into as educators. And I don't know whether that's shared internationally or if that's a particular thing to the UK.
Now, I think there's a degree of that that I've experienced. I think the other element is, you know, accreditation bodies who are kind of the link between the institutions and the profession. So I'm sure that how they think and the standards that they set are a contributor there. But I'm not sure it's sort of universal to every healthcare discipline. So, you know, if I think about occupational therapy and social work, I think they have different ways of thinking about their curriculum. Well, that certainly seems to be what I see from some of my colleagues in that area.
I'd agree. Because I don't know, it sometimes feels like we sort of are in this kind of gap and that we're maybe moving towards some of those ways of thinking, but we're still caught up in this kind of quite kind of biomedical way of being that we've always had before.
I think just to pick up on that, Ben, it's very clear that social work and occupational therapy, or at least in South Africa, are far more theoretical and kind of they have a theoretical underpinning that governs a lot of the decision-making that they do around curriculum and practice. Whereas physiotherapy, I think, looking historically, we kind of wanted to align ourselves more strongly with the medics, the physicians, to kind of give the profession some credibility. And that may have kind of influenced how we kind of think about practice in a very kind of competency-based way. You know, very I think of it as, you know, a series of tick boxes. Mm-hmm. And if you think about how we train practical techniques, you know, it's very much, you know, are your hands in the right place? Are you pushing hard enough? And it's kind of very technical. We spoke a little bit about this previously on an episode with Dave, looking at the clinical practice assessment forms that we use and how those forms are very quantitative. And there is some scope to bring in some more qualitative, subjective aspects of assessment. I wanted to ask what you, or can you tell us a little bit about threshold concepts? So you introduced this, I haven't seen it in a physiotherapy paper before. Mm-hmm. You introduced this idea and you say this may be a way for us to think differently about curriculum. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about threshold concepts?
Yeah. Well, threshold concepts is an educational idea. It's about 15 years old. It's an idea that emerged from a big UK project looking at improving student learning, and threshold concepts was one of the ideas that came out of that project. And if people are interested in reading some of the early literature on that, Meyer and Land, so Eric Meyer and Ray Land are the two people that first wrote about the idea. So threshold concepts are said to be concepts that you need to be able to grasp in order to master a discipline. They're essential to understanding that discipline and or profession. And without them, you can't really do the job or understand the field. There's 8 features of a threshold concept which set them apart from more basic building blocks of knowledge. And some of these 8 features, one of them, the one that's said to be most key, is it's transformative. So understanding that concept will change how you see the profession and understand it, but it also changes you because it becomes part of who you are. So you start to think and practice like a physiotherapist or a lawyer once you have these concepts grasped. Another key feature is that they're troublesome. So there's lots of different reasons why they might be troublesome, but for some reason they're often a sticking point for students to learn. So they're kind of key to knowledge transformation, putting information together to form an integrated understanding of the field, and they're also part of identity formation too.
So can you give us an example of a threshold concept relevant for a physiotherapy student?
Yeah, I wondered if you might ask me this question. I'm not sure what physiotherapy's threshold concepts
right.
If you'd asked me that question 5 years ago, I would have, rattled off a list of them. But throughout my research, I've sort of come to the point where I think I'm not sure what they are, whether they actually exist. And my PhD set out to start to explore these things, and it's led me down a slightly different path. So I think that's something for the profession to actually explore. Some of the early literature has described caring as a threshold concept. So Lynn Clowder from the UK did some work with both physio and OT students and proposed caring as a threshold concept. So to really understand care and empathy and seeing something from another person's perspective was both transformative and troublesome. But the reason why I'm hesitant to say that that's a threshold concept for physio is threshold concepts, one of the other features of them is that they are bounded. So they're unique to the discipline. And a lot of the threshold concepts that have been proposed in healthcare, I think, are probably threshold concepts for healthcare rather than specific disciplines.
Yeah.
So I think that's a question that I can't fully answer just yet.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
One of the things that I was thinking about is, something to do with that physical contact.
Yeah.
Something about, having someone undress in front of you the first time you ask a patient to undress, and they just do it.
Yeah.
That might be something that kind of says to a student, whoa, like this, they just did it. I just asked them to do something and they did it. There's a power dynamic there that, if I think back to when I was a student, that was something that I think really stuck out. So,
yeah.
But it's interesting that there's that uncertainty. So even though the concept kind of resonates and you say, wow, this really kind of seems to fit with the way we think about teaching and learning.
Yeah.
It's also great that it's not clear cut and that we can't very neatly fit things into those categories, put them into those boxes, which makes it, I think, more interesting.
Yeah, and I think part of the other work that I've ended up doing has been about ways of thinking and practicing, and that's helped me to understand threshold concepts and vice versa. Threshold concepts, when you read about it, it sounds really simple, but I think when you actually get into the literature and some of the ideas about the framework, you realise that it's not as complex, not as straightforward, sorry, and that it is really complex. So ways of thinking and practicing is an idea that came from the same project as threshold concepts, and that's sort of about how you put knowledge to work. It's about the values of a discipline and the way people think and then how that thinking informs practicing. So sometimes I think what people have described as threshold concepts is actually probably more like a way of thinking and practicing.
Right.
But to touch on what you said about touch, if I was to say anything about what a potential threshold concept in physio might be, I think it's something to do with how we see or think about the body or bodies.
Right.
But I haven't quite got to the point where I can articulate what that might be.
Right. Yeah. Well, we eagerly await your PhD, where you're gonna lay all of this out in perfectly clear detail.
Yeah,
I'm gonna hand over to Ben. He's got a question.
Okay.
Yeah. Hi, Sarah. So I was just wondering You said that threshold concepts kind of they needed to be unique to the discipline.
And
you were talking about how some of the ones that have been proposed seem to be more sort of general to healthcare.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of thinking about that as you said it, and it seemed maybe kind of problematic in that the way that I conceive of kind of physio practice is that it's there if you're working in one area of practice. So kind of like my background was in kind of community neuro work. I seem to have, you know, certainly I always felt more in common with the OT and the psychologist who was in my team in terms of how I thought about the people we were working with than maybe a sports physio did working in a kind of, you know, high-end sports kind of team. I'm struggling to phrase this into a question, but it felt to me like it would be plausible for there to be a threshold concept that was shared within the area of practice, and that actually kind of what differentiated me from my kind of clinical colleagues was maybe then the kind of knowledge and skill. So we all had a similar way of thinking about the person and what we were trying to achieve. What we as professionals brought differently to the party, you know, it was maybe at that point that it differentiated back out into those kind of skills. I just wonder whether that was something that you thought about, or if there's a kind of a good response that would make me not think of it in that way.
Again, I'm kind of conflicted between the threshold concepts that might be there versus the ways of thinking and practicing. My work has kind of gone down a bit more of the path of looking at ways of thinking and practicing in physiotherapy, and what has emerged, I think if I showed it to other health disciplines, it might connect to them as well. But I'm starting, and some of those things, for example, there's, you know, evidence-based practice has come out and something along the lines of clinical reasoning and you know, treatment aims. They're a bit more sophisticated than that, but that's just a summary. But I'm starting to think it's how we maybe put the threshold concepts of a discipline to use with those ways of thinking and practicing that might be the unique bit. So how the two butt up against each other. And I don't have all of the empirical evidence to kind of support that, but that's my gut feel at the moment.
Yeah. No, sure. And is your feel that there is definitely kind of there are definitely going to emerge clear threshold concepts within the physio profession as we conceive of it now, and that the profession is kind of enough of a distinct being that it will have those shared concepts that it's possible to uncover. Or is there the potential that actually different parts of the profession may have incompatible threshold concepts, you know, things that kind of are integral to understanding how to be a physio in one area of practice might not be the same thing for another area of practice?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. I'd like to think that there's something that we all share as physiotherapists, so no matter what our stream of practice, there's one big idea that connects us. But, you know, I could be wrong. Whether physiotherapy actually might have a threshold concept. I don't know, and I do wonder if we're unique enough from exercise science and podiatry to have that big idea. But I think even that in itself is really interesting for the profession to consider, you know, what is the unique element that we offer compared to other disciplines? And because I'm not sure that we know that at the moment.
As you were talking, I was just thinking, you know, I'm sure that the kind of knee-jerk reaction is, well, of course we're different. You know, obviously we're unique.
Yeah.
And yet if you think about it, what is the is there an essence of the profession that is fundamentally different to other professions, other disciplines.
Yeah.
And I think you'd be hard-pressed to put your finger on it and say, this is the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's been that struggle that is, you know, over the last 5 years or so that has made me go from being quite definitive that, yes, we have threshold concepts to actually maybe we don't.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody once suggested to me that exercise was our threshold concept, and I think in some ways that might be a way of thinking and practicing, but that's another issue. Mm-hmm. But I can't say that we're the only people that prescribe exercise. Yeah. So, yeah.
And the biokineticists would fall out their tree.
Yeah.
Is that all right, Ben? Does that kind of answer your question that you had?
Yeah, that was great. Thank you.
Since we're talking about curriculum, how do you see ideas around threshold concepts fitting into the curriculum? We're already talking about an overloaded curriculum.
Yeah.
It's bloated. So now you're going to ask people to take stuff out.
Mm.
And everyone's very protective over their bits. Their bits are super important.
Yeah.
How do we find space? Do you think it's a question of finding space in the curriculum, having to get rid of things to make space for this? Or do you think that this is something that kind of sits on a different kind of conceptual level? So you don't necessarily have to take something out to make space for it. How do you see this fitting into a curriculum?
In some ways, they're probably the first in, the essentials. So the early literature talked about threshold concepts being the jewels in the curriculum. You know, they were the essential parts of the curriculum. So, and without them, you're not going to achieve the learning outcomes that are necessary to produce a lawyer or a scientist or whatever. So, in fact, that's why I first became interested in threshold concepts. I was faced with the task of designing a new subject right in my early days of academia, and I had no idea how I was going to do that. But I heard about threshold concepts, so I thought, you know, if I can try and work out what these are, these would be the essential things that would go in my subject, and hopefully I would then work out, you know, the building blocks that underpinned the threshold concepts, and they would be the things that go into the curriculum. So they're described as a strategy to help with volume laden curriculum because they would be the first things that go in.
Right. So in the way that you're describing that, this is not really additive.
Yeah.
You don't add this to a module.
No.
You actually take your module and you throw everything out. Yeah. You begin with your threshold concepts and then you start pulling in bits and pieces that support the achievement of or support the students' movement over that threshold.
Yeah. So in some ways they're almost framing, and I see the two things together, threshold concepts and ways of thinking and practicing, as being framed together. It's almost like the ways of thinking and practicing holds the threshold concepts in place in the curriculum. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that kind of will help anyone who's got a question about whether or not, you know, I've got so much, I've already got so much teaching, I've got so much, I can't possibly add more.
Yeah.
You're saying, well, no, actually, you need to throw out everything that you're doing
and
start again.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd go as far as saying throw it all out, but if you can start afresh and try and think of those big ideas,
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, I don't think there are many curricula that wouldn't benefit from having a little bit of a spring clean.
Yes, absolutely.
See, you've got a question there, Ben. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I was just thinking of an important author, I think, here, going off topic slightly. I don't know if you guys have Julia Donaldson over there, kids author. But there's a book that she wrote called A Swash and a Squeeze.
Yeah.
It's all about an old lady who feels like her house is too small for her. And the advice that she gets is to kind of gradually bring in animals to this house. And the more animals that she gets in, obviously the house feels smaller and smaller. And then the person who's dispensing this wise advice, his kind of last bit is to actually take all the animals out, and she realises just how much space she had to begin with. I was just kind of that. I had that image in my head as you were talking there, because it seems like actually, if we can change our way of thinking as educators, it actually potentially gives us permission to not feel we do have to cover every single one of these skills. Because if we've understood the concept, actually adding an additional way of practicing or kind of skill or competence or whatever onto how we would kind of operationalize that becomes easier and doesn't feel quite like it's the kind of key component of what we need to do in education. I don't know, would you agree with that?
Yeah, like I think it also helps you to realize that you can't possibly cover everything. You can't possibly know everything that you need to know, because, you know, things are being discovered all the time. So, you know, it lets you off in that way too. Yeah. Yeah,
I'm just super excited that A Squash and a Squeeze has made it into the podcast.
And I'm going to look it up.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's not my favorite Julia Donaldson book, but it's my daughter's favorite. I think you know, one of the things that you mentioned, Sarah, was this idea that kind of giving ourselves permission that we don't have to cover everything. And if we take something like caring and say that's a threshold concept, whether it's specific to the profession or not,
yeah.
If a student cares, we don't have to cover everything.
Yeah.
They care about the patient. They'll go home and they'll figure it out. They'll ask the questions. They'll come to you and they say, I've got a patient, I'm really struggling. If they care, they will figure out the bits and pieces that we don't cover in the classroom.
Yeah.
So in some ways, by putting the threshold concept kind of front and center, you're ensuring that the student is going to find out what they need to know when they get to the patient and they realize there's a gap in their knowledge or their skills. Whereas if you focus on the knowledge and skills, the student's going to use what they have at their disposal because they don't really care. Yeah. And so they'll go in and they'll treat the patient. Maybe it's not fair, I'm talking about students. This probably is applicable to clinicians and all of us as well. We use what we know. We reach for the things that we're most familiar with.
Yeah.
Whereas if you had a really kind of if you had a caring centered approach, you would first start by asking, is what I'm doing actually best for the patient?
Yeah.
So, you know, you kind of could make an argument, I think, a strong argument, that if you begin with a threshold concept, you can actually throw out a lot of the curriculum because the student or the clinician is then going to make sure that they go out and find out what they need to know.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Yeah.
This is maybe this kind of is a good segue into one of the questions that you put into the Google Doc where you asked, what is worth knowing? So do you have any suggestions for the whole profession? Everyone's listening. what do you, Sarah, think is worth knowing?
I'm going to try and tackle that broadly, I think, and I don't know if I'll do this well. I certainly think knowledge and skills, and there I'm talking about, I'm just going to lazily call that book knowledge and practical technical skills, is an important part of physiotherapy education. It's so core to what we do. But I think it's also... I think different forms of knowledge are important to the profession. Understanding yourself and your values and your place in the profession and the world is incredibly important, I think. And I don't really remember that being a part of my physiotherapy education, but I had to learn it pretty quickly when I was practicing, and I've had to learn it even more as a teacher. So I think that's important. I think also the process, so understanding how, for example, physios come to know. So not just having the knowledge, but, you know, realizing how we form knowledge and how we form ideas. And that might be research, but it might be also reflective practice. So I think that's probably my my rough attempt at answering that question. Well, actually, I might add a little bit. I also think that there's some of the less dominant discourses in physiotherapy are really valuable to know. And, this is not that radical, but, qualitative research, I think, should have more place in physiotherapy curriculum. And, I would like to see more humanities stuff brought into physiotherapy curriculum. And I know this is an area of tension. How do you cover all the other stuff? But I think when you think about threshold concepts and ways of thinking and practicing have helped me to see that those things have value to the contemporary health professional when they graduate.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we're trying in my department, trying to bring in a little bit of thinking around the humanities. Mm. Ben, a couple of weeks ago, had a conversation with Carmen about some of the work that she's doing in bringing the humanities in to help with students' narrative reasoning.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you want to add? Is there any kind of crossover that you see between your conversation with Carmen, Ben, and what Sarah's talking about?
That was the exact thing that was kind of coming into my mind as you were just talking then, Sarah, in that idea of the kind of qualitative narrative, bringing in art and kind of getting students to think about their sort of social constructs around practice quite early on, and having the space to. One of the interesting things from the conversation with Ben Mays that sort of started before a placement and then carried on afterwards, and it took place over kind of a relatively large number of weeks that got the students to kind of reflect on people's experience of healthcare and how they perceived of their role, and I think some of that seemed to fit with this, the idea you were talking about the threshold concept being transformative,
yeah.
Being problematic, needing time to kind of have that discussion, but at the end of it, a very much a shift in how you perceive everything about the kind of work that the student's then going to do.
Yeah.
I was interested as well about because it seems from the Google Doc where you put some information there that this had obviously been a bit of a journey from your perspective, and we were talking there about like what are the key things, what are the things that we need to know, and it sounded like obviously that you've changed your perception of that, and I was just thinking about the journey people take generally to becoming a physiotherapy educator in academia is kind of from clinical and then they'll move across. Mm. And kind of it seemed like from what you were saying, and I don't want to be putting words into your mouth here, but that these things aren't necessarily intuitive to us, so it's not immediately obvious to us what the threshold concept would be. And so it can be easy for educators to kind of focus on what they've seen as being important in terms of the skills and the kind of knowledge that they've put into practice. And I just, again, I'm sorry, I'm struggling to put this into a question really, but I just was interested to know your thoughts, I guess, on that kind of transition from practitioner into educator and how that fits in with this idea of sort of understanding the threshold concepts of being able to make that a core part of the curriculum that we then teach it.
Yeah. So a couple of things come to mind. I hope I'll remember them. First of all, the literature certainly bears out what you've just said, that it's hard for people who are experts to think back on their learning as to what the threshold concepts actually might be in a discipline, and that's certainly one of the challenges with the identification of threshold concepts. Personally, the transition from clinician to educator, I wasn't taught how to teach. I wasn't even taught how to teach my patients exercises, and but I certainly wasn't taught how to supervise students. And so I certainly came into academia thinking it was a lot easier than it actually was. Probably relied a lot on how I had learnt and liked to learn. And, you know, I consider myself fortunate in that I had the opportunity to think about curriculum because it allowed me to start questioning those things about my own experience and the physiotherapy profession. I can't remember exactly your question, but it also made me think, I have done some work with clinical educators in, so clinical supervisors, in asking them what the threshold concepts of the profession might be. And it was a really hard process. And I think that's for a couple of reasons. One is this idea of threshold concepts, as exciting as it is, it's very abstract. And it requires a lot of conversation to nut it out. And I've been engaging in this space for years, so it's tough.
One of the things that was transformative for me in becoming a physio educator was going to a conference that was specifically around health professions education. And I think if I think of my colleagues, a lot of the conferences that they go to, they're very clinical conferences. They're conferences in their kind of narrow domain of clinical practice. And if you're not exposed to not the threshold concept, but if you don't have that experience that makes you realize that there's a whole different world, a whole different way of thinking about the way that you teach, well, why would you ever change the way that you teach? So one of the things that seems to be problematic with threshold concepts is that if we can't clearly define them, if we don't exactly know what they are, if we don't know what they are for the profession, how do we build them into our experiences to make sure that people have these experiences of crossing that threshold?
Yeah.
Because it seems that it must largely be then random. We hope that students have this concept where it's transformative, and the way they think about their practice or the way they think about their learning or the way that we think about our teaching.
Mm-hmm.
If we're just kind of lucky to have this experience of crossing that threshold and having that transformative experience where you're changed and the whole way that you think changes, that's a little bit problematic.
Yeah.
Because then we're kind of just saying, well, you know, good luck.
Yeah.
I hope that you have this experience.
Yeah.
Have you given any thoughts or have you had any thoughts about explicitly building these experiences into curriculum or for teaching colleagues? How might you go about doing that, where you actually design a learning context that is more likely to enable the student or the educator to have that experience of crossing a threshold?
I've certainly tried, and I dare say I haven't been as successful as I would like to be. I think one of the things that has helped is and this is maybe what I was thinking about a little bit earlier, is I've shifted my thinking in terms of how I see my responsibility in the with the students. And I used to feel very responsible that, you know, they had to know X, Y, and Z,
right,
otherwise they would not be the physiotherapist that they needed to be. And I've taken the pressure off myself a little bit,
right,
there, but I also have started to think that my responsibility to them has been to teach them other things. So I'm also very comfortable with them not knowing, and I used to be like that. And so that has enabled me to try different things in the classroom. Probably not as radical as I would like to try. In fact, not as radical as I would like to try. But, yeah, I'm okay with them not knowing and struggling for a little while, because I'm confident that they'll get there when they need to.
Yeah.
I don't think I've answered your question very well at all. Sorry.
No, that's not a problem. I think we're just bouncing ideas around here.
Yeah, these are big ideas.
Yeah.
Curly ideas.
Just earlier Ben was talking about needing time. And it's just like what you were saying. They don't have to walk out the classroom knowing everything. Sometimes it takes time for the ideas to germinate.
Yeah.
Ben, you had a question.
Yeah, so I was just thinking then, if we're thinking about how we kind of design teaching to get students to the point where they can cross over the threshold, is that itself not likely to be kind of quite individual to the each difference student? So is do we run the risk there of trying to kind of provide a very clear structure which might have got us over that particular threshold in the past, but may not be, if we think about kind of, you know, more sort of social constructive learning, you know, does every student need to construct their own path over that line to sort of some extent? And so is this an area where we don't need to get too hung up on exactly how we design in each of these things, or that we need to think about a whole range of ways of designing them in so that, you know, every student has the best chance of getting there through whichever way?
I certainly think a whole range of strategies and avenues is important and probably necessary. But tying it in with the ways of thinking and practicing, because I do think that the two support each other, those ways need to be authentic to the discipline and the profession. And so I think sometimes, you know, there's learning knowledge at the expense of learning knowledge without necessarily, you know, putting it to use in the authentic ways or context. So context is really important. But yeah, you're right. The journey and the encounter that the student has with that concept will be different in some ways. One of the other eight features is this idea of liminality. So that's the journey, and it's quite individual for each student. Some will pass through that really quickly, and others might not get there within the duration of a subject. Hopefully they get there when they graduate. But yeah, it can take a lot longer for students than probably our course structure is designed to do.
I guess the kind of question that I had at the beginning was probably around how students might perceive of this. And obviously, I don't think this is necessarily a problem for threshold concepts, because from the description, they should be challenging. But kind of moving students away from an idea of how they're going to learn to be a physio when they come on the course, through to maybe, so it feels like we maybe need to try and change that perception. So we've got to be able to sell the importance of these ideas to some extent over and above the importance of learning the skills and learning the sort of textbook knowledge, which the students can often be quite focused on, would be my experience. So I just wondered, Sarah, whether there was any, had you addressed that particularly? Have you kind of changed how you've gone at this in order to bring the students along with this idea, or has that not been a problem?
It's certainly a challenge. I avoid the language of threshold concepts because I think it's abstract enough for an academic, let alone a student. So I tend to talk about these ideas as big ideas or themes, but I'm not sure that that's enough in some respects. But I think this is where researching with your students and involving the students in the curriculum process is really important. And, you know, that's where my research has kind of led, is exploring student experiences of the profession to gauge what they're understanding are the big ideas of the profession. And I think, you know, the student as partners work that's kind of taken off in the last few years has lots of exciting potential here. The threshold concepts literature talks about involving students in the process, and there's some good work in that space, but I think the students as partners work has a lot of potential here. You know, the idea that your students are co-collaborators and along the journey with you, not being done to, and not the consumer in the process, I think, is an exciting future area.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I could just ask one last question from my side, just coming back to something you talked right at the start about the role you're thinking about the course curriculum and the subject and how you've moved on to thinking about the role of people and the environment within there. And so I just wondered whether you had made any changes to the teaching environment as a result of this thinking and what that looked like. And also in terms of people, one of the things that I was thinking of there is the importance of having the kind of patient voice, I guess, within that academic discussion. And certainly one of the things that always seems to stick and students recall and talk about for a long time afterwards is any session that we have where we have somebody coming in, involved in their teaching from the individual's experience of a condition or health service. And so, you know, are there any kind of practical ways that, as I say, either that you've changed the environment or that you've brought in different people or changed that mix of people in the teaching to kind of move you closer towards these ideas and change how you're teaching them?
So I tend to use patients where I can in my teaching, although that has limits, but I think that's beneficial for lots of different reasons, not just threshold concepts. And certainly involving the profession, it's been a part of my research to try and not just get the clinical educators teaching our students later, but getting them involved earlier in sort of curriculum processes. But probably the most conscious thing that I've done in terms of what you're asking is even how I see my students and how I try to get them to see themselves as not students but actually part of the profession as soon as they enrol in the course. They're a key member of people, if you like, in the process, and I think how they see themselves and how we then respond to them is pretty crucial to do.
Great, thanks.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Sarah. We really appreciate it. It's been a great conversation. I think we've covered a lot of ground, covered a lot of big ideas.
We have indeed.
We haven't solved all the problems.
No.
But you'll be coming on again when you finish your PhD, and then you'll hopefully have resolved all the problems in the profession.
Great. So, what a challenge.
No, thank you. Thank you again. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's been great.
Cool.
Thank you. Bye.
So we hope that you enjoyed listening into this conversation and that it has stimulated some thoughts about your own teaching. Please do remember that the Google Doc that's linked to this conversation is still open. You can find that on the Google Plus community. So if you have further thoughts or questions, then please do add them in there. Also, if you've got a topic that you think it would be good for us to discuss on Inbeta, either in the next session or at a later date after that, then please do let us know, as we're going to be putting suggested topics to the vote within the community to see what people would like to talk about.
And please remember that this community and approach to collaboration is a work in progress, so we'd really appreciate any feedback you have that will help us improve the experience. You can leave comments on SoundCloud, or you can join the Google Plus community and participate there.